There we go. Good morning.
Morning.
This meeting is being recorded. It's 8:31 a.m. on Tuesday, March 28th. Dr. King, after you call the meeting to order, we'll do a roll call of board member staff.
Good morning, everyone. I call the Arizona Physical Therapy Board meeting March 28, 2023 to order.
And for a roll call, Dr. King.
Present.
Dr. Bastillo.
Present.
Mr. Leone.
Present.
Dr. Hike.
Here.
Mr. Greer.
Here.
Mr. Barton. Mr. Barton is currently absent. Ms. Cardoza.
Present.
Ms. Crowley.
Here.
Ms. Richardson.
Present.
And I'm Judy Chepius. Let the record show that Mr. Joshua Barton is not currently in attendance. Dr. King, the meeting is yours.
Thank you, Judy. First item on agenda is the review consideration for action and approval of the minutes from the regular session, February 28th, 2023. I move that we approve the minutes from February 28th, 2023.
Second.
Any discussion or any corrections anyone noted? Okay, we'll call the vote.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the February 28th, 2023 regular session minutes. Dr. King.
Yes.
Dr. Bastillo.
Yes.
Mr. Leone.
Yes.
Dr. Hike.
Yeah.
Mr. Greer.
Yes.
Motion passes.
Thank you. Review and consideration for action for minutes from the executive session A from the February 28th, 2023 meeting.
I'll move that we accept the minutes for the executive session for February 28th.
Second. Judy, you can call the vote, please. Thank you.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the February 28th, 2023 executive session A meeting minutes. Dr. King?
Yes.
Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Abstain.
Thank you. Dr. Hike?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Okay, thank you. We're on agenda item four, applications and license for certification. A, review consideration possible action on physical therapy applicants requesting ADA accommodations with Christopher Anderson. Is Mr. Anderson on the call?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, Mr. Anderson. All right, board members, do you have any questions for Mr. Anderson?
This is Josh. I don't think I have any questions that we didn't cover last meeting.
Okay. Yeah. Mr. Anderson, tell us a little bit about any additional documentation that you've provided for us for the accommodation that might be different than what we considered and voted on last month.
It was just the documents I provided were just all the notes and from the tests that I had performed when I got discharged that I didn't have readily available at the time. And it just pretty much reiterates the same thing that I've been kind of struggling with when it comes to taking exams and, you know, going to school and whatnot. So I didn't know if anyone had any questions about what they wrote or whatnot, but yeah, that's all. It was just speech therapy and my actual neuropsych test that I had performed.
Thank you. Uh, I think for me and reviewing everything, I'm not sure that it changes my I guess view on how these documents and your condition impairs you from accessing the national licensure exam. Are there any other thoughts from the board?
I'm still in agreement with you as well on that. You know, I understand that it's difficult to take the test, but from everything we know with ADA accommodations, you know, it has to limit access to the test, not just make it easier.
Can I add something to that?
Sure.
I'm not saying like I'm trying to make it easier or be, you know, just give me extra time to be helpful. The way I kind of look at it is it's a disability that I've been having to deal with, you know, ever since it happened, unfortunately, 9 years ago. And the way I see it is just extra time would kind of help level the playing field is where it's compared to other people who might not have, you know, some kind of condition like this that affects their ability to take a test. So that's why I was just thinking in that, in terms of that, it helps make it, you know, more even for, you know, me to take it with this disability.
My apologies there. That's a poor choice of words on my part. So I understand completely what you're saying right there. But again, the ADA access is to, or the ADA accommodations are to improve access to the test. It's not necessarily to level the playing field either.
Okay, I got you.
I still continue with my stances that I took on at the last meeting. Well, I typically agree that we are looking at access. We have seen that he has taken the examination twice, and I would like to give him the opportunity to pass the examination with more time. And so that is still my lean in this case.
Thanks, Karen.
You know, I'm looking at page 11 of 27 of our materials. Patient stated that the anxiety symptoms made it somewhat difficult to work, to take care of things at home, and to get along with others. And I think this is what we were missing from the prior analysis, is any evidence that it affected his daily life function. And here we have, you know, a psychologist acknowledging that, you know, there is some effect to a daily life function outside of the educational realm. I was very disappointed in the professional evaluation we received last month. I don't think it did anything. I think the professional there was given a form, you know, filled it out in, I think, less than two sentences and left us. And reading this history that was provided, I think it was dated February 8th, 2023. It's recent, it's current, and I think this changes my mind, and I think there is evidence that this affects a daily life function. And last month I was opposed, and I think this month I would vote in favor of granting. And I'm not giving him 9.5 time. I think we give him the 90 minutes that he requests. And that would be, I guess I'll make that a motion. I move to approve accommodations, giving the applicant 90 additional minutes to complete the examination.
Second.
Any other discussion?
Go
ahead, Dr. Hike.
I'm sorry. I concur. I think what we didn't see previously was the details and his description in terms of last time of how it impacted his life, I think was not a solid for me in terms of it, the disability aspect. Understanding the anatomy and the neuroanatomy and the memory problems in terms of having to read and the difficulty aspect of that was not as clear, but I think that sentence specifically helps to make his case.
All good points. We have a motion and a second. Are we ready to take a vote? Okay, Judy, you want to call the vote?
It's been moved and seconded to approve Christopher Anderson's request for ADA accommodations, providing the applicant 90 additional minutes to complete the examination. Dr. King?
Yes.
Dr. Bustillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
No.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Good luck, Mr. Anderson.
Yes, thank you all. I really apologize, too, for not having this stuff ready at the last meeting.
No worries.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let the record show we don't have any agenda items on 4B, C, 1, 2, 3, or 4, D, and E. So we're moving to the consent agenda. Agenda item number 5A, recommending for approval for PT licensure upon successful completion of the application, including transcripts and passing the NPTE. First up, number 1, Matthew Kassir. Is Mr. Kassir on the call?
Yes, I'm here.
Good. Would you be willing to answer questions if anyone has any?
Dr. King, this is on the consent agenda.
Oh, you're right. Never mind. Ignore me. Thanks for being on the call, Mr. Kassir. We don't necessarily discuss all of these unless one's called out. So, board members, looking at all of the items on the consent agenda, are there any that you would like to call out to discuss specifically?
No, I'd move to approve all the individuals on the consent agenda.
Second.
All right. Any discussion? Okay. Please call a vote, Judy.
Okay. So it's been moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda consisting of items in 5A, 5C, and 5F. Dr. King?
Yes.
Dr. Bustillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Thank you, Mr. Greer, for your direction. I appreciate it. Okay, we're going to reorder the agenda a little bit, I think, because we have an informal hearing that's got a specific time. So if it's okay with the board, we're going to move to agenda item number 9, complaints and other disciplinary matters. Is that okay with everyone?
Just to clarify, 5C, was that able to be included in the consent agenda? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to make sure.
It covered A, C, and F.
Okay. I wasn't sure if each section was its own individual. Sorry.
Yeah, no problem. Okay. So are we okay to go to agenda number 9A, Matt Midkiff? Complaint 2217, initial review.
Good morning, members of the board. I believe, is Dr. Midkiff on the call? Is his attorney Rita Bustos on the call? Okay, I'm gonna go ahead and proceed.
I do see Ms. Bustos. Okay. There's a hand raised. Okay.
Mindy, before you give us a summary, can I review the script for how we process initial reviews? Thank you. All right. So this is the time and place scheduled for the board's initial review of complaints. There are 2 cases for the board to consider. The matters will be held by the board pursuant to its authority under ARS 322045. For everyone's benefit, I will provide a brief summary of how the board conducts initial reviews. The summary applies to all the cases that we will hear today, and I will not repeat it for each case. I'll first begin by introductions. I'm Dr. Kelly King. I'm the board's chairperson, and I ask the other board members to please introduce yourselves.
Karen Bustillo, Vice President, Professional Member.
Giovanni Leone, Professional Member, Secretary.
John Hike, Professional Member.
Joshua Greer, Public Member.
Okay, thank you. For those participating in the initial reviews, please be aware that we have read all of the material submitted. If at any time it is necessary to refer to a patient, please do so by their initials only. In each case, the board will hear a brief summary of the investigative report from our staff. Once staff has completed the review, the board will ask the complainant, if they're present, if they wish to address the board, and then the board will ask the professional, if present, and if they have an attorney present, if they would like to do the same. In order to give everyone the same opportunity to address the board, we ask those speaking not take time to repeat information that the board has already received. You will be given the same amount of time to address the board that it took to present the investigative report, generally around 5 minutes or so. Please keep in mind that this is not the time or place for the complainant or the professional to address each other. The board has a civility policy that prohibits the use of any type of disruptive conduct when violating the policy. After being given an opportunity to modify their behavior, the person may be removed from the meeting. Once the board concludes its discussion with the parties, it will move into deliberation. While the parties are free to stay and listen to the deliberations, we ask that you respect the fact that we are now discussing the case amongst ourselves and request that you not interrupt the process. The board's options include, but are not limited to, dismissing the complaint, taking non-disciplinary actions such as issuing an advisory letter or an order for continuing education, offering the professional a consent agreement, requesting the professional participate in an informal hearing, or remanding the matter to a formal hearing. Before we call the first case, I want to advise everyone that the initial reviews are audio recorded. Accordingly, it's important that everyone speak loudly and clearly and only one person at a time. And lastly, as a reminder to the board, as an informal hearing, this is not an informal hearing, so if you have a few questions that will help you better understand the case and take action, please feel free to ask them. However, if there are a number of substantive questions or if you need additional investigation, it may be more appropriate to simply move the case to an informal hearing. Thank you. So first initial review is 2217, Matt Midkiff. Mindy, do you mind giving us a summary?
Of course. This complaint was filed by the clinical education director of a DPT program on behalf of a student that was interning with Dr. Midkiff at the time. The student alleged that Dr. Midkiff was improperly supervising and delegating care to support staff and improperly billing for services during her clinical internship. The student was interviewed in April of 2022, and more recent attempts were made to obtain additional details from both the student and the clinical educator, clinical ed director, but that was without success. Dr. Midkiff submitted his patient and staff schedule for a period of time that the student was in her internship with him. I did not request medical records given the lack of information that was provided by the student in her complaint and in her interview, and I've been unsuccessful in trying to obtain additional information from her. There were several areas identified based on Dr. Midkiff's interview that the board may wish to consider in continuing the investigation, and those areas were outlined in my investigative report. Dr. Midkiff and his counsel have received a draft copy of the investigative report, and they did provide a written response that was included in your materials for review. This case is for your review.
Thank you, Mindy. Mr. Midkiff, would you like to make a statement?
Thank you for your time. My lawyer's prepared one, Rita Bustos, who's on the line.
And okay.
Ms. Bustos has raised her hand. Ms. Bustos, feel free to unmute your line.
Ms. Bustos, would you like to make a statement?
Do appears she's having trouble unmuting your line.
She's telling me that it won't let be unmuted, is what she just texted me. For some reason.
We wouldn't have any control over muting or unmuting her at this time. I don't have her muted, so
she might try to log out of the meeting and log back in.
Ms. Bustos, perhaps close out this meeting and re-enter, and maybe then you'll be able to unmute.
Yeah, she just said she'll do that.
Thank you.
There we go. I see that she has joined again.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, I'm so very, very sorry. I don't know what happened with my computer. I was having to log on my phone. Can all the members hear me okay?
Mm-hmm. We can hear you and see you.
Okay, perfect. Again, I apologize. I don't know what happened with my computer. Well, good morning, members of the board. Thank you so much. My name is Rita Bustos, counsel for Dr. Midkiff. You know, we're here today, obviously participating in the investigative process. We've submitted the narrative response and other information to the board. We've submitted a supplemental response. We do appreciate Ms. Richardson's report. I don't want to go over everything specifically as we've already provided to the board, but I do want to point out that Dr. Midkiff is a physical therapist that has 20 years of experience. He has never had any board complaints before and no complaints by any patient of his. The complaint was allegedly logged by Rachel Skolke, the clinical director of the unnamed PT student. We find it interesting that Dr. Skolke did not participate in the complaint process over and above providing the information on the online complaint form, despite repeated attempts by Ms. Richardson to reach out to Dr. Skolke. She did not provide any further information about the complaint. It was surprising to Dr. Midkiff to receive this complaint. The student in question completed the 11-week rotation with Dr. Midkiff. She did not complain during that rotation or have any specific complaints specifically regarding anything that was mentioned in the complaint. It's interesting also, or important also, to note that after Ms. Richardson's investigation, the specific allegations in the complaint were not substantiated. One of the most important being that the PT student allegedly saw 50 to 60 patients a day, which was demonstrably false based on the staffing schedules that we did provide. We also provided the student's evaluations, which she provided good evaluations of her 11-week rotation with Dr. Midkiff. She did not mention seeing more than 2 patients per hour. So again, this is allegations that were demonstrably false. The complaint only came after the student's final evaluation was submitted. Again, we do thank Ms. Richardson for her investigation, but the specific allegations in the complaint were not substantiated, and as noted in the, as we said in the original response, we were able to prove that these were not correct. The investigative report did point out a few areas of alleged concern. We provided specific response to these areas in our supplemental response. We do not believe and would request that no further investigation be completed. Dr. Midkiff does believe that he is following the board rules and regulations regarding documentation. He follows Medicare CMS guidelines, takes those guidelines very seriously, and he adamantly denies that any technicians are making clinical decisions. Given all of this information, the information that we've provided to the board in the original response, the supplemental materials, we would humbly request that the board board dismiss this complaint and not engage in any further investigation. Dr. Midkiff, as you've already seen, is on the line. He has participated and he is ready to continue participation, and he's ready to answer any questions that the board members may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Bustos. Board members, do you have any questions for Mr. Midkiff?
Yeah, I have a question.
Dr. Midkiff, right? You're muted.
You're just clarifying, Dr. Midkiff, if it's Dr. Midkiff?
Yes, sir.
Oh, okay, cool. So Dr. Midkiff, my question is more of, can you give an explanation of how things work from the moment a patient walks in the door for their treatment session? How do things typically go with you delegating to the technicians, whatever it is going to happen with those patients? I saw that you see a patient about every 15 minutes, so I can imagine it gets a little crazy in the clinic. So just want to kind of have you paint a picture of what that looks like.
Yes, great question. From the time the patient gets there, our kind of system in our clinic is that they'll get checked in at the front desk. We have our office is a big rectangle, so everything's open, so you can see the patient walk in. You can sitting in an open waiting room. Either myself or a technician will grab a flow sheet, which is the exercises they've done in the previous session, or that's been scripted for, you know, potentially for the date that they're coming in. They'll grab that flow sheet and we'll get the patient started. If the technician is grabbing the flow sheet, they'll touch base with the patient. Mrs. Smith, how are you doing? They'll relay that information back to me. We'll have Mrs. Smith walk past me. Mrs. Smith, are you doing well? Would you like to start on the bike today? Great, let's start on the bike. The technician will take them over. I'll finish up whatever I'm doing, whether it's exercise, manual therapy with the patient. I'll go back to Mrs. Smith and make sure that everything's good. We'll figure out how we want to progress, write new exercises on the exercise log, keep everything the same, and that just is kind of how it flows throughout the day.
Okay. Is there typically any one-on-one time with you, or I guess the better question is there ever a time where there is no one-on-one time with you, whether it be exercise-based time with the patient, discussion, manual therapy, you know, regardless of what it is there any point where a patient might come in and not see you?
100% no. Never, ever. I mean, that's why they're there. Even though we have open area and line of sight, we have certain patients that are much more manual therapy based, and others that are much more exercise based. Typically there's maybe 1% of my patient population I don't do manual therapy on. Even with our longer term post-op ACLs, we'll do augmented soft tissue mobilization, patellar mobilizations. We'll reassess range of motion, girth, strength, movement screen, as part of their daily treatment plan. So no, there is never a patient that I'm not going to spend one-on-one time, with, even those that are all exercise, manual therapy. We're going to do, like I said, movement analysis, neuromuscular screening, functional testing, something that day. So they will always connect with me, one-on-one in the course of a treatment. And like I said, we do have a big rectangular area. So for, you know, all of our patients, it's that one-on-one time. It's working with another patient. It's coming back to them. It's adjusting how they're performing an exercise based on what I'm seeing in front of me.
All right. Thank you.
Dr. McKibb, it's Kelly King. I have a question for you. You mentioned that the tech might, her aide may, take the patient and walk past you and you check in on how they're doing. Are you with another patient at that time? Are you at a desk?
It could be one of those two. So they'll check in and they'll come over to me if I'm not the one to grab the flow sheet and say, you know, Mrs. Smith is here. You know, how are they doing? talk to her. Let's figure out how we want to get her started.
I guess my question is, how are you maintaining that patient's privacy by asking them how they're doing while you're with another patient as they're walking by?
From a, you know, standpoint, more the question of, are you doing well today? Are you good to get on a bike, rather than, you know, how is the course of your care going? So I do understand the question, but it's done in a way that, you know, it's not, you know, if I'm working on a patient, they will come over and I'll step away from that patient for just a second and come back to them. So I'm not doing, you know, manual therapy on a patient with a patient there and then talking to another patient. I'll step away, come back. But they'll come over to me to make sure that that we're getting them started where they need to, or if they need to wait for me on a table for me to come over and make that happen, I'll make that happen.
So then before the tech starts with the patient, are they asking what their pain level is, how they're doing as far as functional mobility, any changes in their home exercise program, anything like that, and then coming and reporting that to you?
They're asking them how they're feeling that day, based on the last session, and they're coming over to report that to me, correct?
And so then talk me through how you're actively delegating a student to, I mean, a patient to either a student, or do you have PTAs in your clinic?
We do, but the question they'll ask is, how are you feeling today? They'll bring that to me, and then if they're not feeling well, we'll get them to the table, we'll go through, you know, what and why and such. If they are feeling well, again, I'll step away from the person I'm working with. And Mrs. Smith, you're feeling well today. Are good to start you on the bike or with your mobility program that we've set up. But the techs aren't going to ask follow-up questions leading. They're not going to ask what or a why. You know, it is, you know, Mrs. Smith, I'm going to bring you back. How are you feeling today? I'm feeling great. Okay, let's see where Matt wants to start you. We walk over to Matt. Matt steps away from Mrs. Jones. Mrs. Smith, are you doing well? Are you okay to start on the bike? You know, oh, you're not doing well. Why don't you sit on this table, wait for me a second, and we'll figure out what needs to be done.
When you have students, do they sign the patient's charts of the patients they see?
They put SPT.
Their name in the SPT?
Name and SPT, correct.
Okay. And you do know that SPT is not an approved initial. We're not supposed to do that. We're supposed to write it out. It's in our practice act.
Okay.
Okay. So SPT is not an okay thing.
Okay.
Okay. And so then do you co-sign their notes?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
This is Karen Busi. I have a couple of questions regarding how you bring in a student and how you go through assigning students to certain patients or patients to the student. And then what is your daily communication with that student look like, you know, through the day?
Great question, Karen. The first starting point is that we have a 30 to 40 minute phone conversation before the student comes to make sure that they're appropriate for a set. So the clinical director will send me student information. We have a liaison through a company, Ted Carter, who will kind of pick and choose based on where those students live, or, you know, if they have relatives that near a clinic, to make sure it's a good location. But I've always, I generally just take third-year students want students that want to have a passion for the kind of setting that we have in sports medicine. So I'll spend 40 minutes on the phone. We'll talk about the schedule. We'll talk about how the day goes. We'll talk about what their needs are, what their wants are. We'll talk about our core values of humble, smart, and helpful teamwork to make the day go well. We'll talk about that they're there to create the best possible patient experience. they could possibly create. And even though they're there for their own schooling, we're all there for the making sure they get great care and great experience. And there are patients, excuse me, some students that, you know, after that phone conversation, we decided it's maybe not the right fit for them, the patient and what they want. On a daily basis, it is looking at our schedule at the start of the day. The first week is a little bit more observational. The patients that I see, 99% have been referred directly to me. So it's really a feel with each patient and the level they're at and where my student at is which ones are going to be appropriate for the student to work with. Some never want a student to work with them at all. And I'll tell our students that. And some, they connect really well with the student and I'm able to meet the student's criteria with them having some patients that they are independent with my supervision and assistance through all parts of their treatment. With those patients, the student does do more with. It's a daily communication of where that patient is at, where they're appropriate. Every time they come in, the student's going to ask me, you know, what do you think about this exercise? Is that a good progression? Where are they at in the cycle, whether it's, you know, a return to sport or a operative patient? And it's back and forth. Each lunch break is started with, hey, do you need anything? Is there anything I can help you with? Let's look at the afternoon. The end of every day, I have a paragraph that I said to every student at the end of every day. And I sit next to my office manager, so she could tell me, and I ask every student is, how are things going? How else can I help you? If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, how has your experience been? So that is an everyday thing for all my students at the end of the day. And then honestly, because of the time spent with trying to educate the patient during the day, then I'm there for quite a while afterward, cleaning up everything from documentation, planning the next day, and everything that needs to get done in order to still run the business part of it. So that's the communication with the students. I think we all had rotations where, you know, we were in one part of the, you know, facility and, you know, our instructor within the other, but we've created one where a collaborative team effort. I've never built, the student's own schedule because it's very fluid, from day to day. And I don't want our patients to feel like they're being treated by a student. To feel like it's a team approach and collaborative. Plus I want, any doctoral student to be involved in some of the more complex cases that they may not be doing a lot with. So, we co-treat everyone and we make sure the patients have the best possible experience through that.
Great. Thank you.
Dr. Midkiff, this is John Hike. I think you described your clinic in terms of the setup of being somewhat square like a rectangle so that you can see everything that's going on. Is that correct?
It is correct. It's a rectangle with a kind of oval atrium room at this point. So we do have one private treatment room. If patients request, I haven't used it since COVID. I do have an office, but we have a documentation station that's out in the clinic in front of everything. And I honestly probably haven't physically been in my office for the last month. I enjoy that place and I enjoy being out and about. But it is the big open rectangle where you can see everything from the front door to every nook and cranny in the building.
And then this student specifically described, I think, the 10 to 11 o'clock hour is your busiest time. What makes you, what do you think happened with this student? I know it was a while ago, but in terms of, it seems like everything from what your description was going well. And so you were surprised by this. Can you describe that whole scenario as you remember it?
You know, John, again, thank you for the question. And I've talked at length with my staff, because it was a shock to me. And I don't really know. She wasn't a student that integrated herself great within the staff. But still one that I thought did a good job, and she came and you know, over the course of time, like, her personality started to flow and she started to ask better clinical reasoning questions. She remarked regularly about how much she was learning. She struggled on the anatomy, special testing, orthopedic part to start with, but got so much better by the end. The thing I can think of that Rita did try to allude to was the end of the rotation. We went through the final CPI. I gave her the final scores. She gave me a thank you. She gave me a $15 gift card to Starbucks and very well written. A week later, I followed up with her because she was driving back to Maryland, and just to make sure she was okay. She said she was. She again wished me well. I got an email from Rachel Skolke, which we had just three emails, which was the only communication Rachel gave towards me during the course of her rotation. She remarked to me that the score that I'd given her on the CPI all needed to be advanced, intermediate, or higher per her school's requirements. Always filled out the CPI according to the training that I've gotten through the coursework that I've gotten. It's changed a little bit lately, but, you know, try to look at all the criteria, the little drop down menus, and place that student, where I think they fit in each of those 19 criterias, and just be honest and transparent, and hopefully helpful for them to give them feedback to continue to grow. But Rachel had sent me an email saying, for their school, it had to be all 19. And if any of those 19 were below that, then it was failing for the student. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I didn't mean to fail her. There are these things, and you can read the comments that I wrote that I think she could improve on. But in no way did I mean to fail her. Rachel responded, you know, thank you very much. You know, here's again, you know, I asked her if I needed to get back in and switch it in her scoring. The only other school that I've had for the students I've seen that has had that criteria was Midwestern University, and I had to do the same thing for them. So the scores I gave her were in no way, you know, the highest I've given or the lowest I've given. They were somewhere in the middle, and trying to, again, be honest. But my only suspicion is that elicited a conversation with her that my initial scores had been a fail for her grade, which created this. That's the only thing, as I try to analyze and read everything, how this could have possibly happened after, like I said, every single day I asked her how things were going and, you know, whether she had the tools to be successful. She actually put on her midterm that she wanted to do more and be more independent with more patients. And I tried to make that happen for her. Get the best results for our patients and get the best care. So the only thing I can think of is that she had a conversation with someone after the initial grades that it wouldn't have been a passing score, even though, like I told Rachel that wasn't my intent. Let me adjust whatever scores I need to. But you know, just please read the comments to make sure that I'm giving as good feedback as possible. So that's my suspicion. That's the only thing I know. I haven't had any verbal conversation with Rachel Skolke about it. She just said, thank you very much. Thank you for taking our patients. And it was about a week after that, I think, that I got the board complaint in the mail. That was the initial records, and still didn't even know who that was. Some of my staff mentioned the student, and I'm like, how could that be? A thank you and a gift card at the end of her rotation, and only said positive things. But it turned out it was.
Do you think, in terms of, I think at midpoint she suggested that her documentation, I think you mentioned that her documentation was not ideal in terms of where she was at that point. Did you give her assignments besides just clinical care? So if, in the areas where she was deficient, mm-hmm. did you get assignments or different things to do or to look up in terms of going across that while she was in that clinical rotation?
On the documentation side, I asked her to look back at previous notes I'd written. I also asked her to look at a couple of other PTs' evals, their assessments specifically, because I think, if I remember correctly, it was the assessments that I thought could have a little more specificity to the patients to give her some more ideas on how to apply the day's treatment and the evals treatment to that. I didn't give her any book learning outside of the clinic, but just reviewed cases and getting with other PTs for suggestions. She did have a couple days that that she was with one of my other PTs, Morgan Hoopin, and that was part of that discussion to make sure that you were asking questions and about not only the care part but the full treatment experience.
Okay, thank you.
This is Mr. Greer. I just want to talk briefly about the student's review. Are you talking about, just so we're all clear, the review that is attached to Exhibit A of your supplemental response?
Correct.
And there's some highlighting on there. And I just want to make sure I understand it. It looks like it has a midterm analysis, a self-midterm, a self-final, and then your midterm and your final. Is that it?
Correct.
Okay. And I heard your attorney saying that she filled out a great review. This is a review of her. This isn't a review of your clinic, correct?
Correct. It's a review of her within our clinic and the experience. It's the CPI that all the students do on a for all their rotation.
Did you ask her to do a review of your clinic?
I did not.
Okay, I just want to make sure that I wasn't missing something.
I didn't ask for a written review of the clinic. Verbally, like I said, I asked daily that, you know, how her experience was within the clinic and if there was anything else I could help her with. But I don't have anything that she put on paper specific to it.
And so when your attorney was talking about a glowing review, she was talking about this review, the self-review.
She was the self-review for her experience in the clinic, correct?
Okay, thank you.
Are there any other questions for Dr. Mitka? Okay. Dr. Mitka, Ms. Bustos, do you have any final comments before we go into deliberation?
I don't have any final comments. Thank you so much to the members of the board for those questions of Dr. Midkiff. And we do appreciate the time and the consideration.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Okay, so at this time we'll go into deliberations and discuss the investigative report and the statements made in during the meeting. Board members, what are your thoughts? Mindy provided some extra information about some concerns potentially about documentation and supervising. So our options are certainly to dismiss or to ask for medical records review to see if there are substantiations to some of the concerns Mindy heard in Dr. Medkiff's interview. I can tell you I have a couple of concerns about how he is practicing and talking to patients in front of other patients about how they're doing, potentially delegating, but I want to know your thoughts as well.
This is Karen. My biggest concern, truthfully, is that the student and the school have not continued to participate in the ongoing investigation. Mm-hmm. And based on what I heard today, my inclination is to dismiss.
Okay. Thanks, Karen.
I tend to agree with Dr. Bustillo. I have some concerns as well, and frankly, it makes a lot of sense to me that the student whose grade is in the hands of the practitioner is going to provide glowing reviews until the student gets to a safe place and really contemplates what's happening. This is not a PT dealing with a peer. This is a PT dealing with an impressionable student who may not have understood and upon reflection may have identified some serious concerns with the way the practice was continuing. The investigation becomes very, very difficult in light of the student's lack of continued participation. And based on simply the lack of evidence, I think we have to dismiss this case. But I am not persuaded by this, oh, we got a glowing review, she didn't tell us anything was wrong. You know, I've had interns before and they always say things are going great. Because I hold a position of power and they want to, you know, advance their careers, and being a problem solver is not, I mean, problem spotter is not usually the best way to do that. And so I agree with you, Karen. I wish we had a little more evidence, but I kind of have to dismiss this case.
I wonder if we have enough information from Mindy's investigative report to potentially do something non-disciplinary around CEUs for documentation and supervision. Just a thought.
My only thought is we haven't seen anything. And so, I mean, then you have to then further the investigation to ask for patient records and things like that. I'm not sure we've seen that it's warranted, to be honest with you. I do share Josh's concern about, you know, the student participation in all of this. I feel that the students should, if they weren't comfortable going to Dr. Mitkiff, they should have gone back to their school and talked to their clinical director there to try to intervene or to have like a three-way conversation if they were uncomfortable, or if they were that uncomfortable, you know, the student, you know, could have asked to be pulled from that rotation. I do understand the complications of that. Trust me, I do. And how difficult that is. I still struggle with, I make a complaint, but then I don't participate. And so,
yeah, I hear you. I've had students where they've come to me and said, I can't be in that practice, and we've moved them. And so if she felt that strongly about it, she certainly could have looked at her potential resources. So
I'm going to defend the student a little bit here. The student did make a complaint. And so the student may have never wanted to make a complaint.
Good point.
So, you know, I'm not sure we can fault the student for the complaint. And I don't know if the school has any personal knowledge, any firsthand knowledge to continue the complaint. But I don't want to cut off discussion, but I'll make a motion. I move to dismiss this case. We can continue to discuss it afterwards.
Second.
Is there any further discussion or thoughts?
I'm in agreement with Mr. Greer and Dr. Bustillo as well. I just don't think that there's enough evidence to, you know, go into any of the other potential accusations. I can understand where you're coming from, Dr. King, with the, you know, the privacy and things like that. But I also know that, you know, we look at a lot of things as implied consent. You know, if we have a patient who walks up to us in front of another patient and we ask them how they're doing, they have the choice to not tell us and ask to go to a different area. But I also don't necessarily see that he was asking any questions that would violate HIPAA or anything like that either.
Agreed. I think as an educator, it really bothers me that a student potentially might be vindictive and have this come forward and bring that up to the DCE. The DCE should have continued that discussion. And because they are not, and when we look at the evidence does not support the student's comments and or the DCE in terms of this complaint.
Great. Any other comments? Okay. Karen, do you want to call the vote? I mean, Judy or Karen.
It's been moved and seconded to dismiss case 2117, Matt Mitkiff, PT. Dr. King?
Yes.
Dr. Bustillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Sorry. Dr. Hike?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Motion passes.
All right. Thank you. Okay, we are going to move to agenda item 9B, case 2318, Jonathan Dugan.
Brief summary, Dr. King.
Is Mr. Dugan or Dr. Dugan on the call? Okay, Mindy, if you could give us a summary, that'd be great.
Of course. Mr. Dugan did not timely renew his license for the 2022-24 renewal period and was placed on administrative suspension 9-1 of 23. He then practiced on an expired license for 23 days. Ms. Chepius has provided you a draft consent agreement for your consideration, and that's based on the matrix that this board has previously reviewed. This case is for your review.
Okay. Well, with Mr. Dugan not present to ask questions, I make a motion that we accept the consent agreement.
Second.
As stated. Okay. Any discussion? Okay. Move to a vote, please.
Point of clarification, Mr. Harris, the consent agreement was drafted. Does the board move to just accept the drafted consent agreement with respect to the listed violations in the investigative report? Is that how we phrase this?
Yeah, I think the motion can just simply be motion to approve the consent agreement.
Okay.
And then if not accepted, invite in for an informal hearing.
Okay. So I'll add that if Mr. Dugan doesn't accept the consent agreement, we will move forward to an informal hearing.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Are you ready for the vote, Dr. King?
Board members, do you have any discussion or comments? Okay. Mm-hmm. Yep, we're ready to vote.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded to approve the consent agreement, to offer the consent agreement to Jonathan Dugan in case 2318. If not signed, we would invite Mr. Dugan to an informal hearing. Dr. King?
Yes.
Dr. Bustillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Thank you. Item 9-2117, Dr. Breland Lane, he is asking the board to approve, I think, the monitoring contract. Mindy, do I have that right?
Yes, this is Judy's case.
Yeah, okay. This one's mine. Yes, Mr. Lane has engaged with affiliated monitors in response to his order, and he's presenting that monitoring contract just for board approval to move forward.
This is Mr. Greer. I move to approve.
Second.
Okay. If no discussion, then we'll move to vote.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the monitoring contract for Mr. Braylon Lane, case 2117. Dr. King?
Yes.
Dr. Bustillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Excellent. Okay. All right, so we are at agenda item number 9D, DM, review, consideration, and possible action regarding opening a complaint.
If I might, Dr. King, I call the board's attention to items D, E, and F. Just a little precursor. So these three complaints are what are considered preliminary reviews. A formal case has not been opened as yet. And as such, only the initials of the respondents are included in your materials or in this public forum. It was determined that while we have jurisdiction in these matters, the information received to date would indicate either the complaint was without merit, it might not rise to the level of opening a formal case, and or the potential violations of our statutes and rules could not be identified. So if you determine that continued investigation is warranted in any of the three cases, you would vote to open a formal case as requested. And so the first of these is case DM. It was filed by patient LS, and she alleged that DM did not review her medical history before initiating treatment. He denied her access to her medical record and violated HIPAA when discussing her care in an open gym. She also sent an email on 3/23 last week with an additional complaint that DM was not qualified to treat her because she suffered from PTSD. This matters for your review.
Thank you, Mindy. I would move that we take no action. Does anyone have any other thoughts after reading some of the notes?
Second.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm in agreement as well.
Thank you. If that's the case, then we have a motion and a second. Judy, do you want to call the vote?
It's been moved and seconded to take no action. Dr. King?
Yes.
Dr. Bustillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Thank you. Next, we have a preliminary review for NS. And I believe NS might be represented by Mr. Carey. Okay. Thank you.
Yep, and I believe.
Good morning, Dr. King. Good morning, members of the board.
Good morning, Mr. Carey.
So NS was charged with misdemeanor shoplifting in January of 2023 and reported the charges within the 10-day regulatory requirement. However, since her specific charge is on the list of reportable misdemeanors, it is represented to you to determine what, if any, action to take. Mr. Carey assumed legal representation for NS on just recently, and he did provide a written supplemental response, which was provided in your review materials. This matters for your review.
Thank you. And thank you for your response, Mr. Carey.
Mr. Carey, do I understand that the charge has been dismissed for some diversion program?
Yes, that's correct, board member. They did. She did the shoplift diversion, which once she completed it, the charge was dismissed. Just by way of additional information, she did some therapy by herself, did some CLE or CEUs as well, and also got an opinion letter from her therapist about her fitness to practice. Our position was to front load as much information as possible, so that if you opted not to open something, you had at least a level of comfort that she's been very proactive here.
We appreciate that. Thank you. I would move that we take no action.
Second. Well, there's a motion and a second to take no action. Are there any discussions or questions or concerns before we take a vote? Okay. Judy, do you mind calling the vote, please?
It has been moved and seconded to take no action. Dr. King?
Yes.
Dr. Bustillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Hike, or Dr. Hike, excuse me?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. Have a good day. And then the last preliminary review is AM. Is AM in the meeting?
Hello. Yes, I am.
Hi. Hello. Thanks for being here in case we have questions for you.
Of course.
Okay. Mindy, do you want to give us a summary?
Yeah, and I understand that the patient DK is also on the line.
Oh, thank you.
So this patient, DK, alleged that AM engaged in substandard care when she caused a new injury as a result of the treatment that AM prescribed. The patient specifically states that she sought physical therapy treatment for pain related to previous ankle sprains, and that the exercises that AM prescribed caused her a new diagnosis of plantar fasciitis. The patient's complaint and the physical therapy record were provided for your review. The medical record review did reveal several areas of deficiency and documentation assessment for the board to consider what action, if any, will be taken. The matter's for your review.
Thank you, Mindy. Board members, what are your thoughts, or do you have any questions for patient DK or therapist AM? I reviewed, you know, all of the records that Mindy submitted to us, and I do think that it looked appropriate in how AM modified the plan of care based on the patient's subjective complaints of pain. So I'm inclined to take no action, but we're a board, so let's discuss.
I would be in agreement with that. After reviewing everything, I didn't necessarily see that anything would be considered substandard care. Things were progressed as you would normally progress somebody with the same case. Things were adjusted as needed. So yeah, I would agree in taking no action.
I reviewed all of the medical records as well, and agree with both Dr. King and Mr. Leone. In this case, I feel that treatment was justified for the patient.
Thanks, Karen. So with that, I'm going to make a motion that we take no action.
Second.
Dr. Hayek, do you have any other thoughts or comments?
In reviewing it, I think one of the things that's key in terms of injections is the number of injections this person had in a fairly short time. And, you know, if they're in the same area, the cortisone shots themselves may actually cause some of the disruption as well. So I think it's in terms of causing other types of pain or other problems. So I'm in agreement in terms of not taking any actions and not saying that the shots cause it, but that's a lot of shots in a very short amount of time. And perhaps that may have contributed.
Thank you. If no other comments, then Judy, do you mind calling the vote?
It's been moved and seconded to take no action. Dr. King?
Yes.
Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. Hayek?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Thank you. Okay. I think at this time, I'd like to actually just go ahead and move into board business. We have some time. I don't know if you want to stop recording, re-record, or what you need to do, Judy, but we've got plenty of time to review board business.
I think at this time, Dr. King, we're okay on the recording to manage the board business as well. We will have to stop it before the informal hearing starts, so it just seems to flow right now.
Okay, thank you. All right, so agenda item 10A, FSBPT regulatory workshop update. Dr. Hayek, did you attend the workshop?
I did. It was a fantastic workshop. I thought there were a lot of key points that I did not know or was not aware of. And Judy and I both attended, and I'll defer to her in terms of anything that I'm forgetting. I think in terms of the things that I pulled out of this, as we know, of course, the number of PTs in terms of taking the NPTE, the report from FSBPT was about 10% of PTs don't pass NPTE. I didn't know that specific stat.
30 to 40% of those that are foreign trained don't pass, and I found that very interesting as well in terms of potential to make sure that they are very aware of the differences. There's of course a movement with the NPT to move towards videos, and FSBT was stating that the goal for the exam is somewhere in the realm of 4 to 5 videos per exam. So I thought that was interesting that they were going to jump that quickly to that many in terms of that many videos and how that might work. As you know, technology is not always perfect. So I was concerned about that just slightly from a personal standpoint. They also talked about the compact privileges. And of course, that's a big thing. I wasn't aware that there's 28 states that are seeking compact privileges. If I have that wrong, Judy, jump in and correct me. Several others, I believe, that are moving in that direction in terms of legislation being brought forward. One thing I did want to bring up that I thought was interesting in terms of a recommendation. Wait. Are there any questions based off of any of those things I said? Did you all know them and I was just foolish?
No, it's always interesting when the MSBPT shares their data because I just find it so fascinating. As the things that they track that I didn't even think about, it's always so, so interesting.
One thing that I thought was perhaps something for us to discuss was at the very end of our agendas, we have the aspect of the staff in that the staff is reviewing in terms of the licenses and the certificates and, item, 2A and 2B under the executive director's report, all the way to D, I guess, actually, interstate telehealth registrations and all of those. What was mentioned was ratifying that. And I didn't know if we wanted to consider that or if that was a process that I missed. Of course, staff is doing the work here, but the suggestion was after for this month, that we could potentially ratify that as a board. And correct me if I'm wrong, Judy, but I think Dale mentioned this actually helps protect the staff because the board is stating on record that they agree with all the things that have occurred in terms of these last steps in terms of executive director's report 2A through D. So I don't know if we want to consider that as a possibility or if we want to think about that or how that I'd like to hear your thoughts on that.
Was the suggestion then that the board make a motion to approve all of the work of the staff?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Back in the day, each of these were actually on our board agenda and we had to go through and approve every single one of them. And it was actually Dale's suggestion at a couple of years ago that is so burdensome to a board. And it's just a lot of work that the staff, they know when their files are completed and all of those things. And so to move that over to a staff responsibility. So now it sounds like that he's furthered that and probably from experience that, yes, while the staff might continue to move those licenses through. Because the other thing was it was really hanging up a lot of new grads who had passed the exam and who couldn't begin practice until the next board meeting when they were approved. So if that's the case, will we be there again that we can't actually move forward on all of these until the board approves what the staff did? And if that's the case, that's a lot. It's been very challenging. It's been very satisfying, I think, for our constituents to be able to have their licenses more timely than having to wait for approval from the board.
The way I took it was that the staff would do it, but then as we come forward for this month, we would say all these items, kind of like a consent agenda, the board approves. And so that's how I saw it, and I didn't know the history of that. So Judy and I didn't get too many chances. I think what one time that we got in the same breakout session to chat about those kind of things, but
yeah.
thought that was an interesting idea, and I'd love to hear it.
I do believe that what Dr. Hike is mentioning and what was brought up by Dale at the meeting, and this is not the first time he said it. I've attended a number of these meetings. In his presentation, what he is basically saying is that in the end, all roads lead to the board because the board truly makes the decisions. And we've been given the opportunity by statute for the board to delegate those processes to staff, which this board has seen fit to do. It was a way, I don't think any of the ratification, if that's the way that the board chooses to move forward, I don't think it would prevent staff from actually doing the work and approving the licenses and moving forward. It's just the way of the board saying, you know, that we do agree with that. Now, in previous discussions and back a year or so ago when it was delegated to me as the interim and then again as the executive director when the position changed, we do have backup in statute that is an allowed practice and that it is the numbers, not the names at this point. The numbers are brought forward every month for the board to just verify that, you know, this process is continuing and we are approving licenses and certifications and registrations as we go forward. And I actually brought that up in the meeting itself. And I said, you know, our board has delegated that to staff. We presented in terms of numbers. And though the board doesn't necessarily currently take a vote, it is something that is presented. It's on the minutes every single time. So whether we need to move into the ratification, I don't know. I suppose it would be something that the board could choose to discuss at a future meeting, get Mr. Harris's opinion based on any of that. Should we need it? Should the board choose in that direction? I think it's just a thought. Dale presents all sorts of thoughts and it's, you know, something that can perfectly move forward if the board chooses to do so.
Thank you.
And I think one thing to state is obviously the staff does a wonderful job. So it's no reflection of the staff. It was the way I saw it was something that we would be protecting the staff by ratifying it. So.
Yeah. And that is the way that Dale presents it. Absolutely. 100%.
One other item that I thought was interesting was the, and again, I'm the new guy, so maybe you're very aware of this, and I just don't know the specifics, was the idea of carrying out the intent of the legislature and to connect with the legislature to make them aware that that's exactly what our intention is for the state legislature, and that we would be an information source to the legislature if an item were to arise, if they were to seek our opinion. I'm not aware that's occurring, but maybe that's occurring through Mr. Harris or through staff. I thought that was really interesting.
Thank you.
And Judy, did I miss anything that you thought was like a big
no.
Something that
no, I think you did a great job, Dr. Hike. The one thing that I would say, and it's obvious to me through Dr. Hike's report, is that the FSBPT really does put a lot of effort into these trainings, and they're very good trainings, and they offer this. This used to only be once a year, but with the, you know, improvements of virtual meeting opportunities and whatnot, it's really expanded and it opens it up to a lot of attendance and common attendance and frequent attendance. I see a lot of the same people come back a time and again because it's always available and you can learn something new as you grow and change in the position. I'm still always learning something new when I go and I've been there a number of times, but But yeah, it was a good educational center opportunity and in engaging. So if somebody has not been, or it's been a while, staff, board members, whoever, it's a good opportunity. Highly recommend it.
I would definitely go again, just to echo those thoughts.
Yeah. Great. Thank you. Well, thank you for going too. I know I think it's over a weekend, so it's not just a 1 hour, in service. There's a lot to it. And so appreciate your time and commitment to that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Great.
Dr. King, I do believe Mr. Barton has joined the meeting.
Welcome, Mr. Barton.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you for your patience. I apologize for not being able to be here on time this morning.
No worries. We are through the majority of the agenda. We are at agenda item 10B, FSBPT alternate approval pathway. We have an informal hearing at 10:30, so we are working our way through the agenda and covering things before our 10:30 meeting.
It's all right. It's actually scheduled for 10 o'clock, Dr. King.
Oh, the thanks.
But we can continue with board business until then.
Okay.
Let the record show, Ms. Crowley, please, that Mr. Barton has arrived at 9:50.
Noted.
Thank you.
Judy, I think this one is yours, right? FSBPT.
It is.
Okay.
It is. Get my paperwork up in front of me. So this was discussed not only at the regulatory training. This is a program that the FSBPT is offering, and it's called Alternate Approval Pathway. And what this does is this allows the board to take advantage of the FSBPT granting eligibility for exams rather than board staff doing so at the culmination of an application. So we have applicants come to us from all directions. We have them submit directly to us. We have them test through another state and then come into this state and apply. And those are examination students. Of course, we have endorsement applicants coming from all the different states as well. So the FSBPT offers a service to its members for this alternate approval process to grant approval, grant eligibility to take the exam after an applicant registers for the exam, as long as they meet all of the requirements, which that includes the educational institutions who all along the path of the education have communicated with FSBPT about the class. They start setting up their cohorts when it's a brand new class, first year students. They move all the way through the third year when they're close to graduating. And this works for PTA students as well. So any of the CAPTE accredited, that's the key here, is that if it's in a CAPTE accredited program, they communicate with FSBPT regarding that student and that status and how they are moving forward in their progression to graduate, as well as those who have already graduated. So in essence, what something like this would do, it does not change any of the requirements for licensure. It does not change the application process in so much as the documentation that has to be supplied, the information that has to be presented. What it does is it changes up the order of the elements. It allows for, rather than those indicating that they want to test through Arizona, who can only be granted eligibility by staff through the final processes of after reviewing that application in full, it allows them to actually test and then they can apply. This would change a few things if the board is interested. And if the board is interested in something like this, I suggest that we request a full presentation. So we can all hear what the opportunity is. But in essence, it changes the way, the order in which all of the same components are completed. And it's currently the way that another student who would test through another state would come to us. It's that same process. So I provided some information in your board packet, mm-hmm. Including a map. There are a lot of states that are doing this now. Mm-hmm. It would be beneficial in terms of the applicant as so much it speeds the process. It aligns their process of testing more with their schooling than with the application process. For staff, it could very definitely be a huge time saving. It could remove any perceived barriers to licensure in this type of process simply by speeding it, as well as making it more streamlined in terms of filing duplicate applications should the testing not be successful the first or second time. There's a variety of considerations, but I'm bringing it forth because it's a process that may be worth considering. And if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer based on my knowledge and understanding of it.
Thank you, Judy.
I think they also handle the accommodations as well. And then I think the educational institution would not have to have that letter that we're sending to the state board as well. I don't hear a lot of negatives. Of course, I would like to hear more about that in terms of the presentation you described to seek more information.
How about let's consider a motion to have the FSDPT do a presentation, agendize an FSDPT presentation to us on the alternate approval pathway so that we can consider whether to adopt that or not as a board.
Was that a motion, Kelly,
mm-hmm.
or Dr. King?
Yes.
I would second that motion then.
Who did the second?
Mr. Barton.
Me, Josh Barton.
Thank you.
Okay, great. Any discussion? Okay. Judy, you want to call the vote?
It's been moved and seconded to request a presentation from FSDPT regarding the alternative approval pathway at a future meeting. Dr. King?
Yes.
Dr. Bustillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Great, thank you. I'm looking forward to hearing more. Judy, you're continuing Executive Director's report.
Ah, yes, we have... let me see, what did I put on the executive director? Ah, the financials. Any questions with respect to the financials? Okay. Then if there's no questions, next component is the licenses, certifications, and registrations that occurred in February of 2023. Yeah. Any questions on any of them? Mm-mm. Well, that caps the executive director's report.
Are there any future agenda items? I had a question when Mindy was talking about the preliminary reviews and how they're presented. Do we need as a board to talk about having all of those come before us? I know she said that sometimes she sometimes makes a decision based on the merits of the complaint in her investigation, but her comfort level is to bring those before us. Do we need anything from us as a board to encourage her to do that or to support that?
I think what I would like to do, actually, Judy and Mr. Harris and myself have talked about the manner in which complaints are received and processed. Mm-hmm. And I developed a flow diagram of how to process complaints in my mind. And I would like the board, perhaps we could agendize that flow diagram for your review. We can walk through it just so that we're consistent in how I'm approaching the cases and what I bring forward to you and what perhaps falls outside of our jurisdiction and not brought forward. So with the board's permission, I'd like to share that at a future meeting and have a discussion around that.
Okay. Do we need a motion for that, or just put it on as a future agenda item?
That I don't know.
I think we can just play. We're in the future agenda item, so it's just okay. You just identify what you want to bring forward.
And we can maybe agendize it to potentially take action if okay. We need to. Okay. Any other topics that anyone would like on future agenda items? Do we want further discussion on Dr. Hike's summary around ratification of the work that the staff is doing, or are we satisfied with where we're at right now in our processes?
I'm satisfied with
it seems to be working. Okay. All right. Okay. Then that is the agenda up to an informal hearing at 10. Would it be okay if we stopped recording and took a small break before we started into the informal hearing? Is that okay?
Absolutely. Mr. Hayes,
is that all right? Okay. Kind of switch our notes around. All right. So I'm going to ask that we take a 10-minute break. Is that reasonable? Okay. So we'll start back at, I have 10:02 right now. What do you have, Judy?
Yeah, 10:02.
Okay. We'll start back at 10:12.
Perfect. I will stop the recording right now. The recording is stopping at 10:02.